You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, Brian Gunn, and I are recording this week's show on Saturday, February 11th, 2022. So we're one day out from Super Bowl Sunday, which... You were mentioning, Brian, you're having friends over to watch the commercials, right?
Oh, yeah. My friend, he and his son come over and a couple other people, and I make like really bad appetizers. Mm-hmm. And we're basically in it for the commercials. I mean, last year it was great because of the LA Rams, but basically it's the commercials. Now, I know you can see all the commercials on the internet, except it's so much fun. I don't watch them on the internet. I watch them, you know, with the group, and we can, you know, go back and rewatch it. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. Do you watch it? Do you have it on in the background?
I know Nancy will have it on. I typically am face down on a laptop working on another podcast. And have you heard anything about a Dial of Destiny ad airing during this year's Super Bowl? Wouldn't that be...
No, I haven't, but you would think that they would. I mean, you've got, it's the audience that goes to that movie. So maybe they just want to surprise people.
I'm kind of surprised, especially with the news that just broke today about, well, Forbes just published the number, what it supposedly cost to make Indiana Jones 5. And, well, it's not Avatar Way of Water money. That supposedly cost $350 to $400 million, but it's a weirdly specific number that Forbes is citing. It's at $294.7 million, which
and 39 cents. That's what I heard.
When I see something like that, I just, and it's so weirdly specific, I think somebody's getting fired on Monday, because, you know, there's only going to be so many people in the building who actually have that spreadsheet with that number. So you're going to be having those folks over for Super Bowl to watch commercials, and we'll chat about what actually airs during that show. But speaking of shows that have aired recently, we've just had three episodes of them. Yes, of Bad Batch. We had The Tribe, which debuted on that streaming service back on February 1st. And then there was The Clone Conspiracy and Truth and Consequences. Those debuted earlier this week on February 8th, part of a programming event for Disney Plus. And this officially puts us halfway through season two of Star Wars Bad Batch, with episode 9 of the 16 for season 2, The Crossing, debuting, well, actually, the day this show goes live, February 15th.
First of all, did you know they were going to drop 2 on this week? Because I didn't. It was a surprise.
I think we talked about this in an earlier show, how over the course of the season, there were going to be 2 programming events. And in fact, it's worth noting that at the tail end of season 2, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to air 2 episodes back to back.
Okay, I should start listening to our show then.
So I
know what's coming up. I'm not too surprised.
All right. Anyway, we're going to talk about these 3 most recent Bad Batch episodes, in addition to an interview that Harrison Ford just did with The Hollywood Reporter in regard to his return to the role of Indiana Jones. But first, the news, and as always, the news portion of Looking at Lucasfilm is brought to you by Storybook Destination, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. All right, Brian, let's start with a story that started out kind of sad and frustrating, but eventually had a happy ending. And so we all know that we lost Peter Mayhew, the 7'3" tall gentleman. He used to put on that very heavy full body fursuit to play Chewbacca. We lost him back on April 2019, 74 years of age. And of course, it's, you know, the Mayhew family still misses Peter, but had to be frustrating for the Mayhew family to recently learn that many of Peter's personal effects from the years he spent working on various Star Wars films, we're talking, what, scripts, call sheets, that sort of stuff, things that were used in the actual production of these movies, were about to come up for auction without the family's consent. You saw this story, right?
Yeah, I did, but I don't know where what I was reading. Mm. How did they get a hold of it? Did the article say?
It's Peter's wife, Angie, who explained the situation, that Peter shot these movies back in the 70s and the early 80s. After he finished working on these films, he would take this material up to the attic of the family house. But as Peter got older, with his 7'3" frame, he started to have joint issues. It became difficult to walk. And so going back up into the attic was a no-go. And so after Peter's death, the family home gets sold off, and somehow while they're packing up the place, they don't go up into the attic. They don't find these boxes. So the new owners come in, they take possession of the property, they go up into the attic, they find these boxes, and they think they found a gold mine. So they reach out to Rydale Auctioneers, who then announce that these incredibly rare pieces of Star Wars memorabilia are about to be sold off to the highest bidder. And obviously this news upset Angie Mayhew. They hadn't meant to leave those boxes behind, you know, when they cleared out the house. And in an interview she just did with Variety, she wanted to say, "It was one of Peter and my greatest regrets that we had to leave those items behind. His knees and joints had gotten to be so painful, he was no longer able to get into the attic to get them." Angie then went on to say, "I communicated our desire to the Rydale auction house that Peter's items be returned to the Mayhew family. And to give the folks at Rydale credit, you know, one of these things where they turned around to the folks who would come forward with to them with the material. And it's like, we can't in good conscience put these items up for auction. They were left behind accidentally, and the family has expressed a desire to take possession of them. So that would be the proper thing to do." So that's evidently where we are right now. I don't know when Angie and the family will take possession of it, but I like that this story has a happy ending, you know?
Yeah, well, let's hope it doesn't end up in the courts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because there are just, I mean, what do people do when it comes to greed? They're just, logic is thrown out the window.
No, I get that. I get that. But at the same time, you know, that there are decent people on the planet. And speaking of decent people on the planet, Mark Hamill.
What an amazing man that guy is.
I don't know if you've heard what Mark has decided to do to help out with the war effort in the Ukraine. Have you seen the story? Or
yeah.
Okay.
He was signing Star Wars stuff to be sold off at auction, something like that.
Here's what Mark said to Politico. "We decided to sign Star Wars posters, a limited amount, for real hardcore collectors, especially those that have disposable income, that you can get way more money than you would imagine. But the idea is that these posters that Mark will sign are being used to raise money, which will then be used to help maintain the Ukrainian army's drone supply." And wow. The particulars of this fundraising effort are still being worked out. I don't know at this point if it's an auction or it's going to be a competition or that sort of thing. Worth noting here that Mark hasn't signed any Star Wars items since 2017. That's when The Last Jedi came out. So this is kind of a rare thing, folks. But this fundraiser will supposedly get underway next week or thereabouts with an eye toward reminding everyone that the one-year anniversary of the start of the war in the Ukraine is Friday, February 24th. And while we're talking about Friday, February 24th, Did you see what Disney has decided to do to help raise awareness that season 3 of Star Wars The Mandalorian, which, by the way, debuts on Disney Plus on March 1st, what they're doing to try to help make more people aware of that?
Well, is something to do with like Freeform and stuff? Is something to do with February being sweeps month, right?
Well, no, that's it exactly. What they've decided to do on February 24th to, you know, what I love about this thinking is that, you know, there are 5 people left on the planet that they don't know who Grogu is. So what, you know, Disney's decided to do is on the night of February 24th, they are going to air the very first episode of the first season of The Mandalorian. But they're going to do it, you know, as you mentioned, as a sweeps programming event. And it will simulcast on ABC, Freeform, and FX. Begins at 8 o'clock East Coast time. So if you've been living under a rock and you have no idea who Baby Yoda is, this is the episode you have to watch.
Well, you know the whole thing about sweeps, mm-hmm. and basically how it started. Basically, it was a November thing. Mm-hmm. And that was because... And did you ever think of, remember network television, how it always started in September and November?
Do you know why the television season starts in September?
Because that's when the new cars come out.
There we go. Yeah. That's it exactly. Yes. Yeah, so it's like...
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It should start in January, and mm-hmm. it is almost coming to that part where they might start changing like the Emmy Awards from January to January, mm-hmm. but now it's September to September.
Yeah.
And then they always hold back some shows, mm-hmm. and they start them in February mm-hmm. and November so they can get the whole sweeps thing. Just to explain what sweeps are, mm-hmm. it's basically when they measure mm-hmm. each show to see how much they can charge for commercials.
Yeah.
And that's when they usually do their stunt casting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in May is when they have the finales of each of the shows.
So. All true. Also worth noting here that Disney did something similar with Star Wars Andor last year. And by the way, same yeah. thing. They did it in November. But that's when they took the first 2 episodes of that limited series. And on February 14th, they ran on ABC, Freeform, FX, and also Hulu. So I'm kind of intrigued that this time around Hulu isn't in the mix. Though, if you saw the story the trades were reporting earlier this week, I guess Bob Iger is maybe considering selling off Hulu. So, sorry, you get no Grogu goodness. You stand in the corner there.
Well, if they sell off Hulu, then, I mean, where are they going to put the adult stuff? I mean, I know they're kind of sneaking it into Disney, but there's still all these 20th Century Fox movies mm-hmm. that are R-rated that we have not seen for a long time because they're caught up in this do-we-don't-we thing.
There have been discussions of, quote-unquote, parental controls that would be installed into Disney Plus with the notion that, you know, if you wanted to get to the more adult material, you'd have to plug in some sort of a code or that sort of thing.
Right. How many 6-year-olds are more computer savvy than their parents are? Well, their parents will never get to see these things. Why, they're watching, you know, Revenge of the Nerds or something like that.
Anyway, speaking of young people, worth noting that May 4th, as in Star Wars Day, may the Force be with you, that's when Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures debuts. And this animated series, which is aimed at the preschool set, it debuts on that date on both Disney Junior and Disney Plus. And Brian, you were pointing out in your research for today's show, this is actually set during the High Republic time, right?
Yeah, this is going to be the first introduction mm-hmm. visually, not book form or mm-hmm. whatever, of the High Republic, mm-hmm. even before The Acolyte comes out. So this is going to be like, well, it's made for kids, so maybe it's like a primer to what you're going to expect of knowing what the High Republic is. Mm-hmm. The design looks nice and cute and ready, but I hope, the one thing that the best animation writers have ever learned, you don't write down to your audience. those kids are smarter than any parents. If you write at a level where even the adult will get it, the kids will get it. They'll know what's going on. So I'm looking forward to this because it is the first time they're going to introduce the High Republic, which it seems like they're going to be putting a lot of money and effort into. I think after the Acolyte, if that hits, I think we're gonna basically focus on the High Republic for a while.
It certainly will be interesting because, again, I know that was the plan early on, but what with what happened with the Mandalorian and you know, Book of Boba Fett and the Obi-Wan limited series, people fell in love with these revisiting of, you know, sort of classic Star Wars. And for me, it's just sort of fascinating to see, you know, the choices that are being made. And but I think, as you mentioned, with, you know, I think a lot really depends on what happens with the Acolyte. If they if that does in fact get embraced, and kind of the 1-2 punch here of young Jedi also, adventures.
Yeah, also look like what Star Trek did. Star Trek's all over the place. They're in the they're in the future. They're in the past. They're in a place, and it all works.
It does. It does.
And I think you can do that, and especially if you connect the universes. Like, if in the High Republic, you've got Yoda, right? You've got, in the young Jedi, you have Yoda. So that's going to connect. That's going to be the connection from the High Republic into where we are now, or, you know, the New Hope, actually, The Empire Strikes Back, and you're gonna get that connection, and as long as you have that, I think people are gonna be able to go back and forth. You know, and especially if you're gonna start with the children, you know, get them while they're young.
No, you're not wrong.
Then it's gonna be, the High Republic will be their Star Wars.
I think that's an excellent observation on your part. I mean, the commonality of having Yoda as sort of your touch point, and, you know, to get people, you know, oh, I know him. Like, in fact, there's like a lot of people who believe that's one of the reasons that The Mandalorian did as well as it did.
Right.
You know, it's just sort of like, ooh, the baby Yoda.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to go farther back. I mean, there's going to be a movie about how the amoeba of the Force came out of the muck and then turned into, you know, what we are now.
Wow. Okay.
In space.
Okay.
Is that going back too far?
I don't know. You know, I imagine somebody at Lucasfilm right now is like, well, hang on, post-it note. Let me put this. Force amoeba. Yeah, well, okay. By the way, we were just talking about May the 4th. On that very same day that Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures drops, we also get Star Wars Visions Volume 2, that collection of 9 new shorts, which come from 9 different animation studios, including Aardman.
There's going to be an Aardman. Do you know if it's clay or CGI?
There's just a part of me that really, really hopes it's Wallace and Gromit, but I don't think.
Oh, that would be so great.
Still looking for that planet made of cheese.
Have the penguin as like a Darth Vader character.
Oh, even better. Even better. Okay. There is an Art of Star Wars Visions book that came...
Is it just the first season or
first
the
season. Second season? First season.
Okay.
Okay. Came out in November of last year.
Oh, okay.
All right. And again, from the nice folks at Dark Horse who do such a great job with these art of books. Originally listed for $49.99. It was just over at Amazon eyeballing
this
thing.
Which
they do. They dropped the price to $38.99, so that's 22% off. So I'm thinking I may spring for that.
Yeah, it's ordered.
Okay, cool. Well, and now, while we're touching on stuff that Brian is doing in real time, worth noting that when we get back from this break, Brian's going to talk about not just the last 3 episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch, but also there's a Lando Calrissian comic coming, and something that Harrison Ford had to share with the class. But first, this...
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We were just mentioning Dark Horse's Art of Star Wars Vision, which you heard in real time, Brian bought. But we also want to talk about something else interesting that's going on in the Star Wars publishing realm. And you came across this Lando Calrissian comic series?
Yeah, I think it's being released in February,
okay.
Which, of course, is Black History Month.
Right.
Which I think is true. And it's going to deal with the different black characters from the Star Wars universe. Of course, Landau being the first and being the most representative. But there's going also, they're going to have an issue on Mace Windu, of course, who is the coolest badass in the galaxy. Finn, which I hope they do after the last Skywalker, so we can see his story forward, which I think he was probably the most underused character of the third trilogy. Also, Janna, who is the former First Order stormtrooper turned freedom fighter that we got in the Rise of Skywalker, which she was a great character. So I'd love to see a continuation of her. And then Greef Karga.
There we go.
Our favorite Apollo Creed.
There we go.
Yep. So so it should be interesting. It definitely will be something, if you don't get each issue, they will probably put them all together. And I'm pretty sure they're getting the best writers and
well,
artists.
Well, toward that end, this is something Marvel's doing for Black History Month. There's going to be 10 variant covers, and these are all going to be painted by Matthias Manahani. I'm mangling that name, but oh my God, these covers look amazing. He did such a great job with this series of characters, so that they're definitely going to be worth seeking out. Now, to pivot to talking about Bad Batch, and again, these last three episodes. So let's pick up with the one that dropped on February 1st, Tribe. Which, when we first saw the character at the heart of this episode, teased in the teaser trailer for season two, that,
right.
I mean, a lot of people kind of lost their minds. It's like, it's a Wookiee Jedi, a young Wookiee Jedi.
Well, you know we've seen him before, right?
Have we really?
Yeah, he was in season five, I think it was. There was a three-part episodes of the Jedi Younglings. And he was one of them.
Oh.
So he was kind of in the background. I don't know if, you know, he had any, I mean, you know, they talked to him and things like that. But he was mainly in the background. And so when we see him, he's on the run because, and he's trying to get back to his tribe on the Wookiee planet.
All right, I'm going to try it one more time. Artist Matthias Manahani. Matthias Manahani.
Manahani.
Amazing artist. I'm an old guy. I garble words. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Tribe.
I loved it. It was great. It was wonderful to see a background of the Wookiees and how they are this like native indigenous people and how they believe they connect to the forest and they become one with the forest and the creatures of the forest. And also, you can't help thinking about the holiday special. And sometimes that just throws a wet rag right in your face. Except that now, the things they did get from the holiday special, the trees and their houses in the special, they showed them, they were like huts in the trees. And the huts here kind of represent it, but they don't have IKEA furniture. They don't have a stove range. There's no Frigidaire. It's just basically, you know, if you're living in one with the land. And so it was nice to see that. And I'm trying to think of where this is with Chewbacca, too. So how is Chewbacca connected to this? Because it's what? It's almost 10 years before he meets up with Solo?
To be fair, that does give IKEA time to get the branch up on Kashyyyk.
That's true. That's true. Because they are taking over the universe.
They are. I have to admit, what was kind of interesting was to watch the piece of continuity from this episode where Gungi teaches Omega how...
Oh, that was great.
You know, the whole notion of we connect with the trees, we connect with the spirit of the trees, that sort of thing. And we then saw, I want to say, was it in the clone conspiracy where she was practicing meditation, sort of, you know, what Gungi had taught her on board the ship, and it still hadn't mastered it to the level that he had, but kind of an interesting thread to sort of continue to follow.
Didn't Echo tell her that it's like trying to be one with the Force,
mm-hmm.
and that you just have to learn to connect to it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of connection, what's kind of interesting about the next two episodes of The Bad Batch, The Clone Conspiracy and Truth and Consequences, is they do try to tell a connected story, right?
Right. First of all, Clone Conspiracy, mm-hmm. the Bad Batch were not in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Episode. You had Captain Rex, mm-hmm. you had Rampart, who mm-hmm. you saw blow up Camellia,
mm-hmm.
you have, and then you even had Bail Organa.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think what Filoni mm-hmm. is doing with this and his group are doing with the Bad Batch mm-hmm. now is they're connecting the pieces, they're filling in the holes, mm-hmm. they're giving you backstory, and they're tying up ends.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the Clone Conspiracy going into Truth and Consequences was all about.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically who is responsible for the destruction of Cameo. Both episodes take place on Coruscant.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bad Batch are on Coruscant for the first time. So Omega gets to see Coruscant and gets to see, you know, first she saw the tribe
mm-hmm.
and now she's seeing the complete opposite of the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So she's growing in all the, and you can see the wheels mm-hmm. spinning. If they don't somehow use her as a catalyst to connect things, to maybe heal things,
mm-hmm.
then they're missing out. But these two episodes, so anyway, the Clone Conspiracy was basically finding out what happened to on Kamino mm-hmm. with Rampart and how he blew it up and things like that. And then they ask for the Bad Batch help and they come in with Truth or Consequences
mm-hmm.
and they solve the mystery
mm-hmm.
and then they realize that they were being set up the whole time.
Well, you know, the whole notion that I think they talked about how the Emperor, yes, they told the truth, and yes, they got the information out about what actually happened on Kamino, but by doing that, they served the Emperor. They pushed forward his agenda. And some of the storytelling here, you really had to have watched for, you know, Clone Wars to get what was going on. Like, for example, I think you picked up on the Martez sisters.
That was so great when he goes, I've got this place where we can go to.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, I know these two people, they're not using it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it went down, I'm going, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that you know, here, you know, is their little garage in the underworld of Coruscant. I was actually proud that I had paid close enough attention to Clone Wars. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay. The brain cells are working. Likewise, always nice to see Bail Organa, you know, folded into the mix.
He's turned into one of the most important characters mm-hmm. of the Star Wars universe. And in the first movie, we didn't even know.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jimmy Smits. Mm-hmm. I'll watch Jimmy Smits in a phone book commercial. I mean, he is the most incredible
mm-hmm.
actor there is, and especially what he does with Bail Organa.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, see, there's also all these questions. Well, what happened to the clones?
Mm-hmm.
Did they sunset out, or mm-hmm. Did they destroyed away? And this, like I'm saying, they're filling in the pieces.
They are.
This gives you an answer of mm-hmm. what happened to the clones and why.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's the stupidest thing in the world
mm-hmm.
to grab people off other planets mm-hmm. because they can't shoot straight
mm-hmm.
to begin with.
Okay.
And And it just seems like it was more efficient with the clones, but maybe that's the whole point.
I think we've talked earlier about when you and I watch this season of Star Wars The Bad Batch, just the sense of there are chess pieces being moved around the board. And even what happened in this episode where we had Echo step away from the team because he's going to now...
Yeah, that confuses me.
Well, again, but if you think of it from a chess point of view, and he did say to Omega, I will see you again. And, you know, so it's like, okay, so at what point in the story do these characters meet up again? I mean, again, that's for me.
Well, we do know that there has been several episodes so far without the Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we do, you know, there was the one with the assassin. What was his name? Not Sure Shot, but
the equivalent.
There was one with him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there was one with him. Now everybody's going to be upset. How come you people can't remember these names?
Yeah, we're old. Leave us alone.
So you had the clone conspiracy. So they will probably have a Rex. We'll probably know where Cody is. Mm. I mean, the Bad Batch, like I said, I think it's going to be around for a long time. And if they need to fix things, mm-hmm. that's what the Bad Batch is going to do.
Plus,
you do have the Bad Batch, which are, to me, some of the greatest characters mm-hmm. that have ever come out of the Star Wars, especially Omega.
Well,
I can never get enough of her.
The whole thread that was introduced from the race episode where the underworld figure warned the team of be careful of Sid, you can't trust her. It's sort of like that was a piece of writing that was underlined, circled, and indented. So it was like, all right, you don't drop something like that without there being some sort of payoff. So it's like, and again, we have another 8 episodes to go yet, folks. So going to be interesting to see what happens with the rest of this season. Now, we were just talking about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny and the fact that, you know, this film, according to Forbes, came in just inches shy of costing $300 million to make. So is it any wonder, given that Disney's got that sort of investment in this Indiana Jones 5, that Harrison Ford is already out making the rounds doing publicity? And mind you, Harrison is also out. In fact, he sat down with James Hibbard of The Hollywood Reporter. He was there talking up his two TV series, the 1923, which is the spinoff of Yellowstone, and likewise Shrinking, the comedy that Bill Lawrence co-created for Harrison. And Mr. Hibbard, when he was talking with Mr. Ford, it's like, what's with the television? You don't do television. And he started off by saying, well, there was this thing called COVID where none of us work for like 2 years. And at the same time, I had been patiently sitting there waiting for Indiana Jones 5 to finally get out of the blocks. And so, you know, these two interesting projects came through the door from interesting guys. And I said, yes. Hibbard did steer the conversation around to what's going on with Indiana Jones 5. And I think Mr. Ford is 80. And he was talking about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and how that film had a lot of Indy is old jokes in it. And the notion this time around, working with James Mangold on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, it's like, that's low-hanging fruit. That's kind of a cheap shot.
But it's a good cheap shot.
Well, but here's the thing. This is a direct quote from the interview.
Right.
All right. He says, yeah, in Dial of Destiny, there were a lot of old jokes in the script. We took them all out. Mind you, there's a moment in the movie where Indy, you know, observes himself in a situation and basically says, what the F am I doing here? You know, but the whole notion is like they wanted to make a really good Indiana Jones movie. And Harrison clarified a couple of points that a lot of people were concerned that Steven Spielberg, who had directed the first four, didn't come back. And Harrison was very clear in speaking with Mr. Hibbard to the effect, well, look, James Mangold, he developed the script, so I knew what we were getting into, but Steven's still in the movie. In fact, he's always been in the movie. He's not the director, but he's been intimately involved.
It's really funny when you see films or making of films, and he's the producer,
mm-hmm.
and he's just like us, Jim. Mm-hmm. He loves movies.
Mm-hmm.
he knows what movies need, and he knows how to fix things. So it's always good to have him on a film. And I don't think he ruins a film at all. I think he adds all this passion to, and especially with a character that he developed. So yeah, like you said, Steven's there. And you have to have a director like Mangold to say, okay, Steven, am I doing it the right way?
Speaking of which, Hibbert tries to get dig into Dial of Destiny, try to get a sense of, well, what are we getting into here? So he asks Ford, what's the tone like? Because each of the films in the series have been slightly different. And Harrison goes on to say, what I love about this particular movie is that we're meeting Indy at a different point in his life compared to where we've seen him in the other films. It's a logical place for him to be at this stage and influence his behavior and what he's been spending his time doing prior to the story getting underway. And Ford continues that it's a very interesting script that Mr. Mangold came up with. Then Hibbert sort of talks about the thing that a lot of people have brought up, that, you know, because of, you know, Mr. Ford's age, you know, this will undoubtedly be the last time he plays Indy. So Hibbert is, well, is there anybody else who you think could play this character? And Ford goes in an interesting direction with his response. Because remember, you know, that he's been talked previously about how Chris Pratt supposedly might be the next Indy. And when Harrison gets asked about, well, who do you think, who else could play Indiana Jones? He goes, Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck.
Which, of course, if you know the story.
He was cast first.
He was.
Yeah.
And CBS would not let him out of Magnum P.I. to go shoot Indy back in 81.
And remember, at that time, Harrison was famous for the Star Wars films. He tried to do other movies, like that Western with Gene Wilder, but they the Frisco Kid, but they just didn't hit until, you know, and you can you imagine Lucas and Spielberg going, we got to get Tom Selleck. He's Indiana, which he would have been a great Indiana Jones.
No doubt. Yeah.
They did do that movie, what was it, The High Road to China or something like that?
They did, yes. An indie-esque project.
Yeah, but it was just a cheap ripoff. But could you imagine, it's like, well, who are we going to do? He goes, well, what's Harrison doing? He's helped us before, you know, maybe we can get him to make a dinner set or something. But why don't we just see if he's available? And it changed everybody's life.
Though Raiders of the Lost Ark, Steven and George walked that project around to every studio in town. But the terms they were asking for,
nobody would give it to him.
Except Michael Eisner.
At Paramount.
Yep, and that was the thing. Michael Eisner was the only guy in town who could look at this and think, the financials on this, if this thing is as big as I think it's going to be, we'll be fine. But at the same time, he really put the thumbscrews to Spielberg, who, remember, you know, wasn't this the project right after 1941?
1941,
yeah. And people forget that Spielberg couldn't get elected dog catcher after that movie because, what was it? He had spent all of Warner Brothers movies money and Universal's money making this big war, you know, war era comedy that really didn't play in the States, but
it's a mad, 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 mad world. That was his version of a mad, 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 mad world.
That's what's fascinating about it. Overseas, because it made Americans look ridiculous,
yeah,
they loved it.
It's still one of my favorite movies.
Yep.
I love that movie. Mm-hmm. I love seeing the outtakes. Mm-hmm. I wish they would have kept all the stuff with Slim Pickens in it.
Oh.
And Yoshi,
you ain't
Mifune.
Getting blank out of me. Okay.
And Toshio Mifune was hilarious.
Oh, okay.
Just being the way he was. Yeah. Could you imagine? Oh, man, it was just one of those things that you just, if it worked, it would be down in history as one of the funniest out there movies ever made. But, you know, it didn't work, and no company knew what to do with Spielberg and Lucas. So
just to double back on to 1941 for a moment, did you ever do the Universal effect show in Hollywood There was a vignette in the middle of that where the light suddenly came up, and it was the oceanfront amusement park.
Yes, yeah.
And to see...
I did see it, yeah.
...the scale of that thing and how beautiful...
I met several people who worked on that.
Did you really?
And they got into the union by making trees.
Yeah.
They spent 6 months... Mm-hmm. making little pine trees that was used on this this thing. And Eddie Deason and Murray and Murray Hamilton were just brilliant. And there's a lot more other stuff of them up there.
Oh, no
and
doubt.
Like, the dummy's right.
Did you hear what the original casting was for the two people who were supposed to be up in the Ferris wheel?
No, but was it Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin?
Actually, another team of famous comedians. It was supposed to be Jackie Gleason and Art Carney.
Oh, man. And now I didn't know that.
Yeah, and every so often, the Honeymooners people would come together and do color versions of the show and holiday specials and that sort of thing. But every so often, Jackie and Art would have a falling out and wouldn't talk to one another. And evidently, this was when Spielberg approached them. And also the general, the Robert Stack character in
John Wayne.
John Wayne. And again, well, tell the story about what happened when Spielberg gave him the script for 41.
He actually liked it. Mm-hmm. He said, it's not bad, but I can never make a movie that makes Americans look like idiots.
There we go. There we go.
But he didn't dislike it, but he knew that he couldn't be part of it, which is ironic because in the movie itself, the general basically says these people are morons. And because of that, it's just those people were morons, not Americans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's a cute little story that I have. At the Cinerama Dome, they were doing movies that were made for Cinerama, and I went to see Mad, Mad, Mad World there, and I'm sitting watching the movie and enjoying the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. And as I'm, and of course, I sit through credits.
Okay.
And of course, when I'm leaving, this guy comes up to me and he goes, I lost my keys. Mm-hmm. Can you help me find them? And I was helping him, and it was Squiggy of Lenny and Squiggy.
Ooh, wow.
And they are actually in 1941. They play Mutt and Jeff or whatever. They're on the top of the Broadway building.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking. Mm-hmm. And I told them, like, I love 1941 because it's a modern, it's a Mad, Mad World.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you know, I was in that, right? I go, yeah, I do. I do. Mm-hmm. And he goes, when we were at the premiere, we're coming out of the premiere, and me and McKeon, and as we're walking out, they have sound effects from the movie, and you hear sound effects of machine gun fire. And Michael says to me, he goes, huh, they're the critics right now.
All right. By the way, we're talking about David Lander. So
David Lander,
There we go. There we go. By the way, the character that Robert Stack played in the film, the role that John Wayne turned down, that was General Joseph Stilwell. That was the real general who was charge of the the Pacific situation at that point. And
the Pacific Theater.
Pacific Theater. Okay. Now, to pivot from one general to another and wrapping up Harrison Ford's interview with the Hollywood Reporter, he got asked about going over to the MCU to play, used to be General Thunderbolt Ross, but evidently we're now about to get President Thunderbolt Ross.
Oh, he's going
to
be president? Oh, I didn't know that. I knew he was senator, but I didn't think.
Yeah, evidently.
So Harrison Ford's going to play the president
again. There we go. Get on my plane.
Well, no, this is the third time, isn't it? Wasn't he didn't he play the president with Jack Ryan, too?
I know that in the
the books he was made president.
Yeah, I don't.
But maybe not in the movies with Harrison Ford. I don't think
they ever got that far.
Okay.
I know the Jack Ryan Hunt for Red October eventual story arc there. But anyway, he got asked about the Marvel movies, you know, about going over to Marvel. And he said, well, look, I thought everyone else seems to be having a great time over there. I watch these terrific actors having a good time in Marvel movies, and I'd like to do something different than what I've ever done and pleasing people. So I thought I'd try a piece of that. So,
could you imagine him sitting in a theater watching Marvel movies?
Seriously, I highly recommend going to check out this Hollywood Reporter article by James Hibbard, because there's a lot of folks who come into this piece, like Helen Mirren, for example, who talk about, you got to understand that Harrison isn't like every other actor on the planet. Like, for example, how many people set up a production company? And it's just sort of like, no, I don't want to be a producer. More to the point, I don't understand why you need 30 of them today to make a movie. But this is a guy who was a carpenter, who sort of backed into acting. In fact, isn't that the famous story about the Star Wars auditions where Harrison is building bookshelves while all of this stuff is going on, and periodically George waves him into the room to read for Harrison?
Well, but remember that Harrison was in American Graffiti.
Oh, no, totally, totally.
But so George knew him and trusted him to do it. He goes, yeah, let me put this nail in.
Yeah, no, that's it exactly. But it just, I guess, again, what's so delightful about this interview, this is this complete lack of pretense. So it's just sort of like, look, I do what I do. They bring me the scripts, I read them, I show up.
Well, even his use of the F word, which you don't really, you know, when you're reading it, you're going, oh, it kind of like takes you out. You're going, okay, he's just like me.
Yeah.
You know, he's, oh, I once, I worked at the Santa Monica Airport one time, and they had offices there for a company I was working for. And we would take our lunch and we would eat in the lobby of the Santa Monica Airport, which is this very small private airport. And as we were sitting there, Mr. Harrison Ford, and this was in early 2000s. I don't think Devin was born yet, or maybe was just born. So 2002, he comes in there and, you know, he's you know, dressed to fly his plane, and he goes off, and we're like, we're sitting there, we're speechless. We can't say anything. And he would just look at us and he'd give us that, you know, smirk smile. Yep. And then he would go outside, and, you know, to get to the airport, to get to the tarmac, you had to go through like six different doors. Yeah, that was pretty cool, just to see him, you know, getting ready to take off.
There's a story in this article that talks about Calista Flockhart. She no longer flies with him when it comes to his antique planes. It's like, you crashed them once too often. So it's like, look, you know, you go off, have a good time. I'm not getting into
it. Could you imagine that?
Yeah.
He crashes on a golf course. And somebody says, is there a doctor in the house? And there was.
Again, sometimes in life, the cliche is true.
You know, I love California.
There you go. There we go. All right, folks. We have reached the end of today's show. And there's... before we go here, Brian, can you share what the latest you've heard about the Damon Lindelof Star Wars movie?
Yeah, it looks like they've pushed it up to 2025, and they're going to start going into production later on this year. And there's a rumor of the actor who's going to be in it. His name is Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, and the name could be a little bit confusing, but you've seen him in a lot of things. You've seen him in Watchmen, where he was brilliant, where he worked with Lindelof. You saw him in he played Morpheus in the latest Matrix movie. He was Manta in Aquaman, and he's going to be Wonder Man in the DC Universe. They're doing a series for HBO. So he is this year's hot commodity, you know, this year's model. So I think it's a great casting decision, and it looks like the script is basically done, and they're going into pre-production.
Wow.
But I don't know how that's going to... I mean, wasn't Avatar 3, wasn't that set up for December of 2025?
Well, I just checked. It's actually December of 24.
Oh, so, okay.
So there is a window open
there. You
there.
Go.
Now, my next question, is there any mention about where this is going to be shot?
No, they didn't say anything at all. My guess is... it could be shot in the UK.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because this is a story we will try to circle around to on the next Looking at Lucasfilm, folks. But it was a wonderful feature done in the past week, the 10 days, which discussed the unlikely hero in Disney's string of hit Star Wars film. Turned out it was the British taxpayers.
Don't tell them.
Well, I'm pretty sure after this story, they know that evidently in order to get those films shot over in the UK, the Brits ponied up a tax break along the lines of £356 million.
Wow. Okay, I think everybody in England should get a Baby Yoda for that one.
Okay. So that brings us to the tail end of this week's Looking at Lucasfilm. Brian, and of course we'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new show, but until that time, if folks want to hear more about your thoughts, where can they find you on social media?
Well, right now I'm still on Twitter, and it's Geek with Children, C-H-I-L-D-R-N. I don't put a lot up because I'm basically lazy, but if you ever want to get a hold of me and contact me or anything like that, that's where you can contact me. And where can we find you, Jim?
Just like you, I'm still on Twitter, also over at Instagram as Jim Hill Media, also over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News.
Oh, but you've got other podcasts too, don't you?
I do. I have the one I do with Len Testa, Disney Dish. Likewise, I have Fine Tuning that I do with Drew Taylor. We also have Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. Tell you what, folks, if you could do Brian and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend the show you're listening to right now, Looking at Lucasfilm. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what you heard here today, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that'll help pay for a copy of The Art of Star Wars Visions, which, again, that Amazon has just reduced in price. So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to paging through that out ahead of season 2 of Visions debuting on Disney Plus May 4th. And okay, that's enough plugs for today. So thanks for listening, folks. And Brian and I will be back soon.